financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Teller, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm really good. We have a guest today.
We do. I love it when we have guests, especially when they're, you know, they really have something important to say. And so I'd like to welcome to Financial Fitness, Justin Nabaty. And welcome, Justin.
Thank you. It's good to be here with you, Frances and Jess.
Thanks. So Justin works specifically, and not only, but specifically with what many people would call heavy hitters. We're talking about physicians. We're talking about institutions like Yale and Harvard. And okay, so he's got something to say here. And I wanted him to come on the show in part because we share a lot of commonality in the way we run our businesses. And the idea that we talk about the psychology of money and the reason people make decisions, not just about the numbers. And he helps people align their finances with their financial goals, with their life goals. So, you know, I just want to say that he is a certified financial planner. But I will ask you, if you don't mind starting with your story about, can I give away your age? Well, I'm going to, folks.
Yeah,
his age.
You just did.
I just want to say that at age 39, Justin was faced with a decision. It's all yours, Justin.
So 16 plus years ago, almost 20 years ago, it was married into a family of doctors. And my wife's father's a doctor, both of her brother's wife, her aunt and uncle, her cousin's husband, father, and grandfather. And as I was going through undergrad, a lot of my friends and fraternity brothers went through the medical school residency and fellowship process. And I come from I'm the third generation in financial services, with my grandfather and father both being in the industry. And so here we are looking at a group of people who you would think have it figured out. Certainly they're brilliant, they're bright, they've got an amazing career ahead of them, taking care of people. And along the way, what I find out is that the number one financial concern among physicians is having enough money to retire. How is it possible that this group of people would have that be their number one concern? It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, the general consensus is, oh my gosh, they make so much money. Why can't they, you know, retire? Mm-hmm. And from my standpoint, I would say, first of all, their student loans are a fortune, you know, $200,000-$400,000 in student loans, right? And secondly, malpractice insurance, right? How the insurance companies pay slowly and pay less than you might think they're paying. The overhead is astronomical. But above all of that, where in medical school do you learn about managing your finances?
You don't. They actually don't. This isn't funny. I've had conversations with program directors, the doctors who are in charge of teaching the next generation. They'll tell us that it's not their job to teach doctors anything outside of the patient room. Most jobs don't necessarily come with a 10 to a 30 page employment contract, but doctors do, pretty much every single one. It's rarely do you find that a doctor does not have a large document drafted by an attorney. And these attorneys are working for the employer and they're looking out for their best interest. And so they want to make sure they capture everything they can in the event that a doctor leaves. Well, what's the turnover rate like for young physicians? What's the likelihood of a physician continuing on with their first job? It's very low. And when they leave the job, there's usually clawbacks. There's signing bonuses that need to get repaid. There's income plans that are called income guarantees, which, okay, sounds, it says the word guarantee. Like, isn't that good? Isn't that like safe? Income guarantee means you're getting advanced money and you can keep this money if you produce enough.
Right.
If you produce enough, they're going to take it back.
You know, in the rest of the world, Justin, we call that a draw.
It's a draw.
It's a draw.
It's a draw.
You talk about a ripple effect or a trickle down thing. If you're going to the doctor and you've either had, oh, I don't know, three primary care physicians in the last 2 years, okay, or you're saying, I want this treatment, and they're saying, but insurance won't cover it. You need to be paying attention to this stuff, because if we don't solve this problem at the top, right, we aren't going to solve it at the bottom.
What you just said, the ripple effect, that word, it triggered me. And the thing about trigger words, you literally gave me full body chills when you said that. Why? I'm not
Sorry.
kidding.
Yeah, well.
That's why if you saw me, if you replay the video here, you'll see I went like this. You can't, I'm wearing sleeves right now, so I can't show you my goosebumps. But the ripple effect, when I got into the industry, it was like, okay, I want to do something that I actually care about, that I am deeply passionate about. And
Right.
I saw an opportunity where the community could flourish if doctors were in tip-top shape, patients would get good quality care, and I didn't even know how bad healthcare was back then. I really didn't. I thought, here's a vulnerable group of people that need help because they don't know what they're doing outside of seeing patients. But the issue that they are dealing with is, if you give bad patient care, then the patient's not going to do well. So your community's going to suffer. So if we take care of the patient, or take care of the doctors in a way that they're at their best, then patients will get better care, and then that'll have an effect. So that it took me all the way back to the beginning of the very early stage. Like, this is it. This is where I want to go deep to make this happen. Do you know that two-thirds or more of doctors are on antidepressants and on
Oh my
anxiety
gosh.
medications? Two-thirds. And actually, if you search the suicide rates among doctors, it's double the general population. Double. And in the last 40 years, what's happened is healthcare has gone from being controlled by physicians, to now being controlled by insurance companies.
That's right.
And is an insurance company going through medical school? No. Are they ever getting trained by a physician on how to take care of patients? No. So that has a ripple effect on what we receive. When we want to get a procedure done, the doctor has to get permission from the boss. Well, who's the boss? It's the insurance company. Like, the doctor knows what's best for us. They're the specialist. And yet they can't even decide. They get shut down. So it's a huge factor to why our cost of healthcare is rising.
I certainly agree with you on that. And also, I'm sort of a big picture, when I went right to this a ripple effect thing, I'm sort of a big picture kind of person, I think, in terms of larger pictures. When you've been in your career for 10, 20, 30 years, you don't really want to say, hey, I don't like that the insurance company is now making my decisions. I better go back to college and learn how to be something other than a physician, a vet, a dentist, right? A medical professional. People signed up for one thing
They
quite some
did.
time ago
They
under the
did.
guise that they were going to have this nice lifestyle, that they would be well respected, that they would be doing something good in the community, and that they could make a difference. And now, if you know any, and I have several friends who are physicians, right? If you know any, and you have a frank conversation with them when you're not their patient, they will tell you it's a nightmare. I get 7 minutes with a patient.
It's
You know,
terrible.
if I go over 7 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever, then you probably know the number, but if I go over that, I can't fit the insurance billing in.
This is not what healthcare is designed to be. And it may not sound like it's connected to the general public, but we're talking about people providing not just general office healthcare. These people are doing surgery, okay? Life or death situations on our pets, all of that, right? And we're not giving them any support in terms of finance. So I don't know why this isn't taught. So let me ask you that, Justin. When you're speaking at Yale or Harvard or the Mayo Clinic or the Cleveland Clinic, or you have a very impressive list of places you've spoken to in person or spoken at in person on website, which, can I just say, is it do they go to physiciansthrive.com?
It's Physicians Thrive. Yeah, that's where it all started.
Yeah, physicians plural, physicianssthrive.com. So if you go there, you can read about Justin Nabate. But when you go there and you say to them, how come you're not teaching this? And they say it's not our responsibility,
That's what they say.
then what happens? Do you say, well, we've got a program we can bring, or what happens from that point
Well,
where they say, sorry, not our job,
yeah, I share that example because that's where places really just kind of stick their head in the sand. There are others that will allow avenues for it, whether it's during work hours, which is usually already built out. They have their entire pipeline for the semester. Sometimes they'll do after-hour sessions, they'll do retreats. They do have doctors come in and speak. It's really interesting. They'll even have alumni come and give talks that I started teaching back in the day. It's like they're communicating their story from a physician's perspective, but it's pretty narrow. To what you said at the beginning, we haven't touched on it yet, is they come out with an average debt of around $220,000. Can you imagine? You finish.
I can,
I
yes.
mean, I know you can because you're a pro at this, but you got 4 years undergrad and 4 years medical school, 8 years, and what do you have to show for it financially?
Yeah.
You have, we call it in the imaginary McMansion. It's this mortgage that you have now. Now it has a lot of value because you have the human capital associated with it, and you can create the income ongoing. But you have this debt boulder that you're carrying, and so anybody who has debt, it's to what you said. It affects you in a significant way. And we have a client who's a headache specialist, neurologist, and he teaches at businesses in the workplace about employee wellness in the workplace, absenteeism and presenteeism,
Yeah,
where
we just talked about this on a show too, absenteeism and presenteeism.
it's a real
Yeah,
expensive thing, and
it is.
migraine, and it's this mysterious, debilitating disease, like actually headache and it's like the number one, number two cause of disability is issues with your brain that you're having.
Sure. I'm having an issue with my brain right now. And we need to take a break for a minute. So I just want to ask you if you'll stay with us for the second half, Justin.
Sure thing.
Thanks.
All right. In the meantime, can we get your phone number?
402-515-6327.
And Francis?
413-773-3333.
And you can also go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with more part two coming up of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
And we are back. Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we have a special guest today, which is always fantastic.
We do. Justin Nabate is with us, and a CFP, a certified financial planner, for those of you who don't love the alphabet soup of the financial world. I started the show by saying he has a special niche with physicians, but the idea here is that it is important to all of us. First of all, you may be a physician listening to this, or you may learn something from the show, but it's important to all of us to free these people who are in charge of our health care from the financial stress they have. And I'm not saying we'll just pay off their student loans for them. That's a totally different show. But they're stressed about finance because they're not taught anything about it. And it's just like the rest of us, by the way. If you thought this was an elite sect that somehow had a handle on their money because they're brilliant physicians, and think again. These people are brilliant, but they have the same problems we have at a lower level for money. So I wanted to ask Justin specifically to talk a little bit about, at this very basic level that affects us all, what the heck is going on with healthcare costs? Why do healthcare costs keep rising, involving insurance? Anything you can teach us about that, please.
Yeah, I wish we could just say it's one thing and then just go after that one thing and then it'd be problem solved.
Sure.
But one of the biggest issues is the administrative burden, which you've alluded to a little bit earlier with the coding and all the different hoops you have to jump through to practice medicine. But if you had to guess how many administrators there are for every one doctor in practice today, how many would you say?
Wild guess, nine.
It's 10. So you're spot on.
Oh, I
Yeah, you're so close. That was awesome. Yeah,
was close.
10.
Thanks.
10.
Wow.
So why wouldn't it be that there would be like one or two administrators for five or six?
Right.
Or like, why couldn't they come up with a way to run the business side efficiently from a regulation perspective to be able to support multiple people? If you work in any industry, let's say you have a sales team, usually have a sales manager. That one person is responsible for serving and supporting a number of people on the team.
Well,
It's
it
the
was that way. It
what's
was,
that?
when we talk about how things have devolved, right? Not evolved. It was that way. You know, somebody in my family used to work for an eye doctor's office, and there were five doctors in that office, and there were three people up front, and they handled everything. You know, so, and that was not very long ago. So what's
But
happening?
when you can look at their charts that show the growth in the population of physicians over time, and it's very flat, and then you look at the growth in administrative personnel, it's actually like very alarming when you look at it. They haven't done a new study of this, and I don't know if somebody's just like preventing the data from coming out because they don't want to show how bad it is. Because I think the last time they showed it was like 2010. Like they showed like 2000 to 2009 or 10, and then it stopped. And they haven't produced the latest, but that's a factor. You've got technology and all the advances there. You got drug costs and what they're charging here in the US versus other places around the world. That's a major factor. We have people that are more chronic illness is a factor. Going back to
The
doctors not getting
population.
education for finance or financial literacy, guess how many hours of education there is on nutrition for medical school?
I bet not many. Am I
It's like
wrong?
it's like maybe 8 hours in
I mean, that's
4 years.
crazy on nutrition. Yeah. You know,
And
oh, go ahead, please.
I mean, what's the most important thing when it comes to your health? You can't change your genes. You can't change who your parents are, but you can change what you consume and what your lifestyle is.
Sure.
Why aren't those two things like at the top
Do you
of
happen to
the?
know how many hours are spent on prescription medication?
I don't actually,
I bet it's a
but
lot, probably, right? I
well, I mean,
was.
the majority of the way that they're it's the whole thing is it's all about sick care. It's not true healthcare anymore. There's health insurance is not healthcare.
Well, health
It's
insurance doesn't pay much for preventative medicine,
no.
right? You know, you brought up the administration thing, and I think you know, when I talk to colleges and universities, they're suffering from a very similar thing. And so there's some overlap here. If you look at the amount of administration at a college or a university today compared to what it used to be, the administrative jobs are, you know, plentiful now and needing to be filled. So there's all these layers. All of this costs money, right? I mean, when you talk about why are the co is the cost of something so high? You know, we got 10 people. What was it? 10 administrators for every one physician?
It's the exact opposite of
Get
what it should
paid.
be.
Yeah, they all get paid. And the same thing at the colleges, a lot of administrative personnel. Not that I don't want people to have jobs, but all of this stuff has to get paid. And so that is going to come from someplace. And, you know, people will say, well, let the government pick it up. Well, where does the government get their money? The taxes. Who pays taxes? Us.
Yeah. Well,
Okay, so.
you're pressing on a nerve right now for me that really,
Oh, good.
like, I mean, there's four ways to spend money. And Milton Friedman, one of my favorite economists, talks about this. You can spend your own money, or you can spend other people's money on yourself. Well, you spend your money on yourself, you can spend your money on other people, you can spend other people's on yourself, or you can spend other people's money on other people.
Right.
And the system is so complex now, and it's almost like intentionally designed to be this way to make it difficult to address the problem. And you've got all these people now deciding how money should be managed, and it's not for your best interest. Some of the other things that are factors with the cost of healthcare going up is fee-for-service models. They're trying to get doctors to do every single test. Like my father-in-law, he just retired at 45 years of emergency medicine. And he had run-ins with management where they were telling him, you need to order this test and that test, like all these things you need to do for the patient. He's like, well, they didn't have indications for that. Like, I'm not going to go order all this stuff. That's why you get like five, six, or seven bills sometimes when you go in because you have different groups charging for different things. He got into not necessarily fights with them, but like they were pressuring him and they were threatening him that he needs to do these things. He's like, well, I'm supposed to do no harm and do what's in the best interest of my patient and look out for them. And the pressure is see as many patients as you possibly can, run them through, bill as many codes as you can, order as many tests as you can, even if it's not relevant. And I think it's what's hard for us as patients is we think the doctor is the problem, or the doctor tends to get pinpointed as the issue, when in reality, it's everything else behind them. There's so many competing forces that are driving the attention, and they don't even get to decide. So part of this is having that understanding that you're, in a way, it's almost as if there's doctors don't exist anymore, really, because of what we talked about before with the insurance companies taking over.
Justin runs a podcast called Doc Nation, DOC Nation, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I just wonder, we try to do these shows where we sort of shine a light on a problem, and then we also try to say, this is what could be done about it, right? So that people have some action points. So I will ask you, because Doc Nation, I believe, is a place where physicians can go and be in a meeting and discuss this kind of thing. Am I right about
You
that?
can. Yeah. And actually, I'm glad you bring it up because for you, the patient, this is you and me and every single one of us. All of us are a patient. Healthcare is in a terrible place. Why is it that in 2025, after all the investment, after all of the research, after all the technology, after all the things, we're in terrible health condition compared to how it used to be as a nation? So bad. And it's because doctors don't get time with you. They need more time with you, the patient. And they don't get that because of what's happened within healthcare with the corporatizing of medicine. And so I say that because there's a bill in DC right now called HR 10073. And why is this bill important? And why is one of our members of Doc Nation testifying and speaking and communicating with con at congressional hearings about this? It's because for 24 years, Medicare has been cut for doctors, but it hasn't been cut for nurses. It hasn't been cut for physician assistants. It hasn't been cut for hospitals and the facility fees. But for physicians, the ones who we talked about before, 8 years of their life have sacrificed just to get the education piece. Then they go on for 3 to 7 more years of residency, and then
Comparing business.
1 to maybe 5 or 6 more years of fellowship. Like it could be 20 years that they're in this pipeline to help you take care of yourself. They're the only ones within the healthcare sector that's getting cuts.
I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
So
So
why would, if the patient needs better care and the one who knows and can actually bring the care the best doesn't get time with you because cuts, cuts, cuts for 24 years. Doctors are negative over 24 years on pay. They're negative. They're not even, they haven't kept up with inflation. So why?
no one will believe that, Justin. Believe it or
You
not,
can look it up.
nobody listening to this will
I
believe that, but
know.
it's true, right?
I know, but it's true. It from where it used to be 24 years ago, it is down. And malpractice is a major issue. And every doctor, I mean, it's going to come at some point, but HR 10073.
I have to ask you a question about that. We only have a couple of minutes left, but so first of all, what can people do? They can look up HR 10073.
Ask your the congressman of your district to co-sponsor. There's over 70 co-sponsors. When we first got onto this, there was like 50, and so we've gotten a bunch more co-sponsors. There's over 213 congressmen that signed a letter supporting this, and this is all the way to the right, all the way to the left, and everybody in between. This is like across the board, it's bipartisan. So the people that you don't like and the people that you do like, everybody you'll find it's getting the attention of this is the most support we've seen. So this is to stop the cuts and even do some reversal to empower your person who's supposed to take care of you to be able to have more time with you. And if this goes through, this will be the first time in a couple of decades where you've seen something that could be fruitful to help you get better care.
I thank you for that, and we will put the information up so that people can go and find out about that and decide what they want to do. But I just want to say ask you one more thing. From a patient standpoint, I go to the doctor, I want to see a doctor, and somebody says, "No, you need to see this nurse practitioner. The doctor's busy. You need to see, somebody else." Is
Yeah.
that, in your opinion, is that because Medicare will cover that full amount and the money is there? And it's been cut back from the doctor side of it. I mean, that's really a layman's question, but I'm a layman when it comes to being a patient. So.
Well, there's two sides of business, right? I mean, you want to try to minimize costs and you want to increase the amount of revenue coming in, just simple math. And the cost for NPs and PAs to the healthcare establishment is less. So they're going to prefer that all day long. You do have the factor that comes into play, which is the physician shortage. We don't have enough doctors as it is. There aren't enough residency
Why?
spots open, huh?
I wonder why. Gee, it sounds so appealing after listening to this. Yeah.
Well, if you're really smart and you care about finance and like getting good return on investment, it used to be that parents and grandparents would tell their kids to go into the same profession that they did.
Right.
Back in the day, your family had a trade or had an occupation. You kind of did that.
Right.
Now they're telling their kids, don't do it.
Yeah.
And you have really high quality people that have good families that it'd be great to have the next generation be coming in and taking over, but they're telling them not to.
Yeah.
So,
This is just one more sign of this. We need to do something about financial wellness for everybody. And the fact that the doctors are under so much stress, that they have so much administration, all of that points to the same thing. We've got to get tools to people to be able to manage their finances well and actually probably try and reverse this situation where the insurance companies are making the decisions about our health care.
Well,
Justin, closing argument from Justin.
yeah, just to your point, I hear you. I thought the same thing, and I've been nothing but entrenched into the world of their personal lives based on the business. And if you look at the entire money spent in healthcare today, the trillions of dollars, guess what percentage of that share of the pie do doctors receive? Of all of the healthcare dollars, what percent do you think?
20.
That's what I would think. That would be reasonable to me.
That
Seven to eight, 7 to 8% is all they receive.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure people will have questions, so let's get information from both of you. Justin, where can people reach out to you?
So you can email me or contact us through our website, physiciansthrive.com. Email justin.navati@physiciansthrive.com. And you can also reach me 402-515-6327.
Excellent. And Francis, your phone number?
I just want to thank Justin for coming on the show. And my phone number, of course, is 413-773-3333.
And you can also go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hey, Jess, how are you?
I am doing okay. And I know we're talking about feeling better with wellness today, right?
We are. We're talking about financial wellness as an employee benefit. So
Okay.
maybe your employer can help you
become more financially fit, to improve your financial literacy, to reduce your stress.
Yeah, I think we all need that right now.
Now, you might wonder, you know, why would an employer do that? Or why would you think that your employer should do that? But it's actually proven that stress about finances, right? If you're stressed out about your money, it's going to reduce your productivity at work. People
right,
who are stressed
I can imagine,
about
yeah.
their, yeah, they're distracted at work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't me making this up. These are, you know, bank rate surveys, Bank of America, PwC, the United States government has done this. But I actually wanted to talk about this from the perspective of health, because WebMD, of all places, mm-hmm. WebMD thought this was important enough to do a big article on it. Okay, it wasn't about the fact that I can't talk. Okay, so WebMD thought it was important enough to do a big article on this. And what
okay.
they were saying is, and I'll give you a few stats that will lay the groundwork here. And this is going to parallel, which is why WebMD is interested in it, I'm sure, parallels, you know, a wellness program about your health, right?
Mm-hmm.
Financial wellness is very similar. You know, financial wellness should include the kinds of tools that you need, like a health program would, to become more fit, right? So if you lay the groundwork on that, you'll see, like, you know, let's take diabetes as an example, right? WebMD
mm-hmm.
might do an article about diabetes, and they might say one of the things that you need to pay attention to is your weight or your, you know, intake of certain foods, right? And so they would give you those tools to educate you in a way that you can help yourself become more financially well. And of course, many employers have picked this up with things like gym memberships or reimbursement for wellness activities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, financial wellness is following the same path. And just to give you some groundwork about what might be, what the symptoms might be.
Okay.
Bankrate did a survey in 2023 that said almost half of the people have less than 39% savings. Now, that might seem a little wonky, right? How do you calculate that? But let me just point out that 10% had no savings compared
mm-hmm.
to the year before. So in
okay.
just 1 year, they went to no savings. 68% said they were worried that they couldn't cover a month of bills if they lost their primary source of income. That means Americans are living too close to possible financial disaster, right? Actual bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And so employees are more stressed now by the survey, more stressed now than about money than they were, Jess, at the height of the pandemic.
Wow. Yeah, that's shocking.
It is shocking. And when we're talking about stress and what is causing that, 85% say that inflation has had a major or severe impact on their finances, right?
Yeah.
And Bank of America survey says that 90% of employers feel responsible. 97% feel responsible for their employee financial wellness. Now, to give you some idea, in 2021, that was only 41%.
Okay, so this is really on top of mind now.
Yeah.
Are a lot of companies now doing this? Is there a percentage of how many companies are really looking at financial wellness and offering some kinds of programs?
Yeah, so I think it's something like 97% of companies are interested or think they already have a financial wellness program.
Okay.
Now, the reason I'm laughing about that is because, of course, I talk to a lot of companies, and they're suffering from the same problem that the general public is suffering from. We don't really educate people, companies included, in what a financial wellness package is. So somebody comes to them and says, hey, we've got this great financial wellness program. It costs you this much per month, you know, put all your employees on it. And what happens, and you can tell me this might be true of the radio station, is even if they adopt it, most of the employees have no idea that it's there, or it's such a labyrinth of information. It's so much, they can't unravel it. There's no clear plan about, for step one, you do this, and step two, you do this, and step three, you do this. Oh, you have something that doesn't fit in the box, you get some personal help, right?
Well,
that just doesn't seem to be happening in the companies I've talked to. What they do think they're good at is 401ks. And so traditionally, employers have felt the pressure, I think, of not only providing a 401k, but doing a company match because they're trying to keep their employees and they're trying to attract the best talent. So it costs them a lot of money to do this, a lot of money to match that 401k. Now, why are they doing that? Why are they focused on the 401k? Because they see it as the only way to show their employees that they care, that they are a company worth working for, that they will give you a benefit, they will give you a perk that you might not get somewhere else. And go ahead, please.
Well, I was just going to say we were talking a little bit when you told me what we were going to be talking about for the show, and we're talking about this, and I've got to say it. I don't even know if my company has it. That doesn't mean that they don't, but I'm wondering how many people actually have had this benefit all along and just really had no idea.
Well, I'll give you an example. How many
Okay.
people have a 401k and have never spoken to the person running it?
Oh, I'd say probably the majority of people.
They go to the HR and they say, I want to make a change. Or there's some person that comes in one time when the 401k is set up and says to everybody, 50% in stock and 50% in bonds, you're good. But where is the management that you would get on a regular basis if you were if you were educated about how to ask for that or how to understand your 401k and how to decipher those things. And so I think what happens is, everybody's busy doing their job, right? The heads of companies are busy trying to tick the box on we've got this benefit. But the implementation of it is seldom there. And the financial tools are usually things like, here's a thing on how you can invest. Well, that's great if you have money to invest, but it isn't so great if you're working paycheck to paycheck and you don't have a debt management plan, or you have a debt management plan and you're investing something, but you don't have any idea if that's really within your affordable range because you've never done a budget, right? So these kinds of tools have to be available to people, and it has to be held up and said, hey, there's a professional here that can help you with these tools. And there are webinars and there are online courses and there are, calculators that you can use that are at your beck and call, and they either cost you very little as an employee or they don't cost you anything. Now, where I'm headed with that is when employers start to understand the value, the dollar value, we're not talking about the wellness value right now, just the money involved in it, in not having to constantly be asked for raises, to be asked for more 401k contributions, to be asked to pay more health care. When they start to see the benefit in helping people be more financially well, they start to understand the value of a financial wellness as a benefit platform. So, for instance, we talk a lot about how if you don't have any debt when you retire, you need less for retirement, right? I mean, that's just obvious. If you're not kicking out 4 grand a month in debt or 10 grand a month in debt, you don't need a bazillion dollars for retirement because you can live on less. So what happens when employers start to get this is they start to realize that whatever they're putting into the 401k, whether they're matching it or they're not, suddenly by helping people build a budget, get rid of their debt, and plan their retirement more logically, they make the most of those retirement dollars. Now, what this is really about, Jess, is this digital relationship with money, right? With a person or a company that provides your financial wellness. And if you're an employer who cares about their employees, because that's the message here, that's the total message. Look, we care enough about our employees to give them a gym membership, to give them financial wellness benefits, right? And if
So
doing that.
is this familiar enough now that if you're listening to the show today and you're thinking, oh, I'm not really sure if we have it. So if you go to your HR person and say, do you have a financial wellness program? Are they going to look at you like you're crazy, or are they going to be, up on this?
It's a good question because I think the answer is either no, we don't have that, or I don't know, or yeah, we have that. Here's how you get it. And then when the people go there, they get completely overwhelmed because there's no straight path. There's no person involved, right? Like we do webinars and, videos and all of that so that we're there to say, Look, here's your jumping off point to start. Literally, it's me literally in a video saying, here's where you start. Step one, do this. Okay, when you get that done, come back to us and we'll watch another video or contact us. We'll give you step two. And here's what our end goal is. And so as they're moving along through the process, they get positive gratification, you know, positive reinforcement all the way. So they have some idea. I mean, imagine that you suddenly had to go to medical school and there was nobody teaching anything. Just, okay, Jess, tomorrow you're going to go into surgery. Good luck.
I think sometimes with finances, people think like, oh, I can figure it out. Like, I'm pretty smart. I can figure it out. But there's a lot of intricacies to it, as I know from talking to you every week.
Well, we're counting on that, actually. We're counting on people saying, I want to be able to manage my money myself. I think I can do it. You could do surgery too, but you're going to need some training. You're going to need some support. You're going to need some tools. And that's what we're providing, right? So it's fascinating to me that once employers really start to get, hey, wait a minute, this is not only going to be a money saver for us. We might save money on the healthcare in the long run because our people are less stressed. We might have less employee attrition because they're showing up for work. We might have less distracted employees because their money is okay. And guess what? Where are they going to go to a competitor and get that? When you're talking about a benefit and you're talking about building a caring relationship with your employees, that is invaluable, right? So when they start to understand that, then they start to understand because they get feedback from the employees. Hey, not only are we saving a bunch of money and making the most of their retirement dollars and helping them be less stressed and being seen as their hero, but guess what? The general public is also fonder of us because we care about our employees, right? And things of that nature. They're seen in a more favorable light. They attract better talent. Right? Hey, I'm going to go to that company who actually cares about me. And we saw this in the early days with companies that had pensions. You worked for a company that had a pension because that was appealing to you. They cared about your future. Where is
I would
that now?
think, yeah, I would think one of the hurdles might be that employers, not all, but some employers don't want to spend money up front, even though, like you're saying, and this has been proven that it's going to pay off for them in a multitude of ways, but it's just sometimes getting them to do the initial amount, they don't want to do it.
Yeah, it's true. If it's a large sum, when it's a small amount, it's very affordable per employee. And many companies, I mean, we often recommend that the employee has some skin in the game. The employee splits the cost, right? So now it's ridiculously affordable, Jess. I mean, ridiculously
Like probably
affordable.
a couple bucks an employee, maybe.
Well, it's more than that, but per week, maybe, right? But, you know, like let's say I'm just going to pull a figure out of my hat because plans could be different depending on the benefits they include. But let's say it's $39 a month or $40 a month to do this. A month. You can't cough up 40 bucks a month for your employee, you know, or $20 a month, right? And so, but nobody thinks it's going to be that affordable. Everybody thinks it's going to be this monster number. And sure, when you multiply it times a lot of employees in a large company, it turns into a lot of money. Guess what else turns into a lot of money? The amount
Your
they
savings.
save by doing it. That's right.
For sure. Let's take a break here and we're going to come back because there's a lot more on this, I'm sure. I've got more questions too. But I want your phone number.
Sure, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com anytime. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hello.
Hey Jess, I wanted to tell you, you are still from time to time out of focus, and
Oh.
I bet that's how people feel who have trouble with their money.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm making a joke of it, but that's what happens with your money too, right? You have a financially stressful problem and you know, you feel out of focus and distracted and you might even be taking time off work. And then, you know, you resolve it and things come back into focus and you're okay for a while and then it comes back and so, you know, you really have to look at this about the long-term results of somebody feeling financially fit and how that creeps into their health, right? According to the American Institute of Stress, the physical effects of worrying about your money, right, may include irritability, mood swings, appetite changes, stomach issues, fatigue, and insomnia. Left unchecked can lead to mental health concerns like anxiety, depression, or even suicide. I will tell you that in all the years of doing this, almost no one has ever said to me, "Boy, I really got stomach issues over this." What they say is, "I'm suffering from anxiety and I'm
For sure.
pointing my finger at my money." Now, if left unchecked, according to the American Institute of Stress, anxiety, depression, and even suicide are the places that goes, we are way too close to depression and suicide over money. Over money. I don't mean to minimize that, but it is a thing we can solve. This is not terminal cancer. This is something that can be corrected. It can be taught. It can be done well by virtually everybody, given the right support.
I think that you just said it in there though, the key there is talking. Like so many people have these money problems and then they don't want to tell anybody and they take it all on themselves. And yeah, for sure, that's a heart attack waiting to happen.
Well, and when you bring that up, who wants to talk to their employer about it? So they don't go to their employers and say, "I've got this major financial problem," because it's not seen as what they want their employer to know about them. But instead they say, "Can I have a raise?" Or they don't say anything and they just look for another job that pays more. When we talk about retention, when you are providing something as valuable as fixing somebody's finances on an ongoing basis, getting them out of debt in 8 or 9 years, including their mortgage, helping them with a budget that they've never had done successfully in their life, probably, and then actually making the most of their retirement as part of working for your company, they're going to like you. That's the bottom line. They're going to want to stay. It's hard to replace benefits like that by going to another employer. I am sure that you remember, you're too young probably to remember when everybody went to work for a company with a pension, but you remember 401k starting up,
Yeah,
right?
I was going to say we've talked about that before about how it's not supposed to replace, and a lot of people look at it as a replacement.
Well, it replaced it because it could. Employers started to see, "Hey, wait a minute, we're spending a boatload of money on pensions. We just pick up this 401k that the government said will augment, the pension."
And match 3% or 4%.
That's right. And now many companies are not even matching anymore. They're just
A
saying,
lot of
"Here's
them
your
froze at
401k."
COVID. Yeah, a lot of them met
That's right.
for COVID. They said we're not going to match, and then they just never brought it back.
Doesn't come back. So if you think like an employer for a minute, now, of course, employees are hearing this message loud and clear, like, "Wow, I could have that at work. And I better ask my HR people if I have a financial wellness package and what does it include," right? But if you think like an employer for a moment, and you think about how similar it is to a health package, and you think about the savings that you might have in your health, in your healthcare costs alone over the long haul, because people are not ill as often, right? And your premiums might go down because you have a healthier employee population, right? That case can be made and has been made by many people. When you start to think about that, the first thing for an employer to think about, sadly but true, that's why we're in business, right, is about the dollars. But the second thing is about a healthy, happy employee workforce and what that means, right? Some companies have been very, very creative about these things, right? Apple comes to mind, and some other companies where they create an environment for their employees that is based on what the employees really want, and everybody wins, right? So we can do the same thing with and we recommend it with an employee wellness package. So we do something called a pulse survey. And a pulse survey is just a term for asking your employees, right? And we create this, right? Let's ask your employees which of these things they're most interested in. And then we can cater the benefits to the employees' needs. So there's no wasted money in a plan. Employers are wasting money when they just throw every financial tool in the book at their employees, most of which they don't use, can't understand initially without some support, and are just adding to the murkiness of sorting out your money. right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we say, okay, well, you know what? 65% of your employees were interested in paying off their mortgage ahead of schedule, or interested in, getting a handle on their credit card debt or their cars. And, 32% were interested in, how they're going to buy their next car. And 40% were interested in maximizing their retirement dollars. And whatever, this percentage was interested in budget, or these people were interested in estate planning. Then we just create the customized financial wellness package to meet their needs. But no matter what you create, and what you provide your employees with, the takeaway from this, the thing that matters the most, is about the education, the implementation. You can provide any tools you want. If they're not accessible, understandable, usable, friendly, the employees aren't going to use them, and you're wasting your money.
So I'm curious on the financial wellness package, and I'm sure that it's not one size fits all, they're all different, but what are some of the popular I guess programs inside of that, like some of the things that would be part of a financial wellness package that seem to be popular?
Yeah, well, I can give you some things that a financial wellness package should include, all of
Okay.
which we do, right? But they should include things like online financial tools. And this is, according to this WebMD article, again, it just happens to fit exactly what we do. Online financial tools like calculators and things like that that help with the day-to-day budgeting, saving for college, retirement planning, and more, all of which we do.
Okay.
One-on-one financial counseling services for immediate concerns. That's the stuff I call crisis management, right? That's what we do. Financial coaching. How many times have you heard me say we're financial coaches, right? Financial coaching to help set goals for the future. Now, you might think there's a lot of overlap here, but they are, in fact, a step at a time attainable, right?
Okay.
In person or virtual, which obviously we do, education classes taught by experts regarding investing and easy ways to save, et cetera. This is straight out of their playbook, okay?
Okay.
I mean, how many people think they have an insurance person or an investment person, and it turns out to be somebody who's got a year or two in the industry. Okay, we're talking, I mean, everybody starts somewhere. I'm not pretending that that's not the case for myself included in the early days. But at some point, you want an expert teaching these things. Debt management services was next on their list. Student loan repayment, credit cards, et cetera. Some employers are actually offering help with the student loans, which is another place where they're saying, look, in order to attract employees, we will actually help you pay off your student loans. They could save a boatload of money by using our program, still help pay off the student loans way ahead of schedule, and make the most of that, right? Additional tools like help with identity theft. How many times have we talked about that sort of thing? So I think, even some companies, when we talk about saving money, some companies are offering short-term loans now, like a payday loan, but at low interest to help people who don't have cash reserves. So they're actually shelling out money, assuming they'll get paid back out of their paycheck, right? To help people who don't have cash reserves. Well, how about this for an idea? How about we help people build cash reserves?
Where they have, yeah, exactly.
Employers
They don't
off the
need that
hook.
payday loan.
Yeah, and get them off the hook. So, this is where we really partner with employers in a way to give these things to the employees. So you asked me, what kinds of things are popular? It's the same stuff we're doing for the consumers one-on-one. It's just involving an employer in the middle so that we can help as many people as quickly as we can, and everybody saves money, right? Everybody does better. Everybody is more financially literate and financially well, and that translates into productivity, right? They listed the things that the WebMD article, again, I'm quoting this a lot because I read a lot of articles on this. WebMD just had their stuff together. They just got it, that it affects your health. So they listed smart move for employers to offer a financial wellness package because it improves employee satisfaction. It increases engagement. It raises productivity. It enhances well-being. It attracts and retains top talent. I mean, what don't you like about any of this stuff, right? And it fosters a positive company culture and a healthy employer brand. So I don't care how you slice this, it comes down to, now here's my one opinion about this. So far, I've given you facts and figures. My one opinion is it's the right thing to do. Okay, it's the right thing to do, and employees want it, and employers are feeling responsible for it, but it needs to be done affordably and effectively.
I will say that, just talking to a bunch of people about work in general, the thing that you hear the most, money is great. I'm not going to, knock money. Money always good. But the benefits you get from a job sometimes matter more. Like whether that's how a manager treats you, to appreciation, to small little things that you don't think are a big deal, like having a wellness package where they're saying like, oh, we actually care about whether you're anxious or stressed. Like I hear that from more people about like, you want to work harder for management that does that for you.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true, Jess. And it isn't just about the warm and fuzzy. If you think about why people leave a job,
Probably more
stress.
money or bad management and
No,
stress.
stress. They
All right.
can't do it anymore. God, I just hate my boss. I hate my situation. This is awful. They don't care anything about me, and they're working me. I've all this overtime. Nobody. That's what makes people leave a company. People will work for less money, and if they feel valued.
Right. 100%.
And that isn't the point I'm making is that isn't always about the dollar. It is about value. Value is not the same as price. Anybody who's ever shopped for anything understands that. When employers get this, when they start to get, wow, I think I could put a benefit plan in place for almost no money compared to what I'm trying to spend by keeping my help doing other things.
And
And
well, like
guess
you said
what?
at
I
the
keep.
beginning, and well, like you said at the beginning of the show, it's a win-win because yes, it shows that they care about their employees, but they're going to save money in the long run.
There's a difference between a financial wellness plan and a financial wellness campaign. And you have to have a person behind it, even if it's in video. There we are saying, okay, Jess, you're doing pretty well. You've got through this stage, and now it's time to get to the next stage. And so we're gamifying this in a way that is fun and engaging for people and is not just, oh gosh, now at the end of your day when you're really tired, let's talk about your money. That's not going to work. It's got to be something like we're doing. Yeah.
Well, this was a super interesting topic. Thank you. I'm sure people are going to have questions, though, so I want to get your phone number.
Thanks. W employees or employers, of course, call us at 413-773-3333.
Or visit hugyourmoney.com. And we'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.
Thank you.